Welcome to the Healing the City podcast. The following podcast is a ministry of the Village Church in Tucson, Arizona. If you wish to support the Healing the City podcast, you can go to the show notes, click support the show, and you can become a subscriber for $3, $5, or $10 a month. This will help offset the hosting costs and continue the ministry of Healing the City podcast. Also, if you wish to support the show, we really encourage you to rate us on Apple and Spotify and other places that podcasts are listened to, and give us a good review. Thanks.
Restart the podcast.
Welcome to the Healing City podcast. My name is Pastor Eric Siepen, and across from me is my beautiful wife, Pastor Sue, and very loud and obnoxious Pastor Mark for today.
Hey.
It's been a while since we have done a podcast on the Gospel of John.
Yeah. So we've missed multiple sermons, but we think we can kind of condense those sermons into three ideas, all based around the I am statements by Jesus.
There you go.
So the first, we have multiple sermons built around the I am the light of the world.
Uh-huh.
And then we have one sermon built around the I am the gate
and the shepherd,
the good shepherd. And then we just had a sermon about I am the resurrection and life. So where do you want to start?
I think we should do a short review of R2 and let Sue's most recent sermon be the one that shines above them all.
Sounds good.
So that would be with you. We're going to
swing
and a miss. Okay, move
here. Well, so we had I am the light of the world.
Yeah.
Jesus making this giant big statement at the Feast of Tabernacles.
That's right.
And then that conversation kind of lingers for multiple chapters. It's even around in...
Yeah.
He mentions it even in
There are 12 hours of daylight in...
He gives a little parable.
Yeah. Chapter 11. That starts in chapter 8.
That starts in chapter 8. And then chapter 9 is the blind man, the man born blind, who is healed on the Sabbath. And so everyone's... Instead of being excited that this man who's born blind, no one's ever heard of a blind man receiving sight, is what the blind man says to the Pharisees in rebuking them in their poor theology. And they're all up in arms around the Sabbath, and he's like, well, I don't know, I was blind and now I can see. And yeah, they have all these funny interchanges. And
he's a cool guy. I want to have him over for dinner.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I think when you're blind for that long, you just are pretty matter of fact.
Yeah.
And that's the only way you can get anything in life.
He's like, what are you talking about? Like, where you're like, is he a sinner? Isn't he a sinner? I don't know. I can see now. Do you guys see this? Do you see that I can see?
Do you want to be his disciples too? Is this
why you want to be his disciples? Why are you asking me these questions?
Yeah, that's a pretty good part of this.
It's really good. And in the second sermon, I got to bring in the idea that I actually had at the end of my first sermon, at the end of John chapter 8, before I preached on John chapter 9, I was like, oh man, I should have done this. And then I got to bring it back in John chapter 9 2 weeks later, which is, how do we perceive ourselves? And what does the enemy want to tell us? So when God calls us out of the darkness into the light, what do we think we are walking into the light as? What's the picture that we have in our minds of ourselves walk into the light? Because I think a lot of times when we're stuck in our sin, when we're listening to the enemy, we just think, oh, there's this like icky, gross monster sitting in the darkness, and I don't want to bring that into the light.
Right.
Yeah. But what Jesus says is that when we walk into the light, all that is washed away, and we are made children of God, and we're given this inheritance, and we're given a purpose and a direction, and which I think ties into what you talked about in the empty tomb, Eric.
I did not talk about an empty tomb.
No. Yeah, you did.
I did?
Yeah.
I thought I talked about a shepherd. Oh, you mean...
No, between my John chapter 8 and my John chapter 9 sermon...
We talked about Easter.
...was Easter.
There was Easter. Oh, wow.
And you talked about the empty tomb.
That's right, because we jumped all the way.
And you talked about mission and purpose and direction. I forget all the words you used.
Oh, come on now.
But that's the...
Authority.
Authority.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was... Yeah. Yeah. Authority.
What was it?
Mission. And
Belonging. I think it was belonging. Yeah, we got it. We'll get there.
Yeah. Someone encouraged me recently, and they said, you just need to remember that you belong, you have a mission, and God's given you authority to do that.
So somebody remembered.
Yeah. So people do remember that.
But that's what happens when you walk into the light, when you walk into relationship with Jesus.
Yeah.
Is that you're given those things. You're given belonging and mission and authority.
Authority of the King. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, that's
right. I was still thinking in the narrative of John, so I forgot we had leaped forward.
We had leaped forward and then leaped back. Yeah.
Yeah. Which you did a really good job of introducing in your sermon. People should go listen to this because you connected it to the great Gandalf and the trolls. Yeah. And that was really good.
Yep.
That was fun.
That was a good one.
And it made sense of things.
Yeah, so man, it wasn't just a few chapters that we've flown by. It's also Easter that we've flown by.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow.
That's crazy.
So then so I did Easter.
Mm-hmm.
And then you did your sermon.
Yep.
And then I came back and did I Am the Gate and I Am the
Good Shepherd.
Good Shepherd.
Yeah.
And
I feel like the identity statement continues through that too. Like we are the sheep.
Right.
And Jesus is taking care of us. That's a core identity for us.
Right.
And we also, in the latest sermon, if we follow the example of Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, we're the one Jesus loves.
Yeah.
And
yeah. No, it's...
So in all of these identities that Jesus holds, we stand in a specific place in relation to him.
Yeah. No, that's really good. Yes, we have identities in relation to who Jesus is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's very good. And my application was that there's the way of the sheep and the way of the shepherd. I liked it in my sermon simply because I was like, oh, look, the way of the sheep is just illustrated for you in the text. That the Pharisees are confused at first by his, cool parable or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they are divided over who he is, and then they're just murderous. And that really is the kind of, it is a, what do you call it, a diagnostic for yourself. Like, and I thought that there was a good question because someone said, well, okay, confusion. Like, how is that a way of the sheep? Because people can be confused, but it's when you choose confusion as a way of life.
Yeah.
Like, when you are obviously being confused and the answers are there, or that it's just a risk that you don't want to take. Yeah.
Well, I think the example with the Pharisees is they're like, here's Jesus saying, look, here's all these things I'm doing. Here's the good things I'm doing. The healing the blind man and making the lame walk and all these things out of Isaiah 35 that Sue brought up last week. So Isaiah 35 brings out all these things that are going to happen when the Messiah comes.
Right.
But instead of looking at these cool things that Jesus is doing, they're choosing to be confused about, well, is he a sinner or isn't he? Because he's doing these things on the Sabbath.
Right.
And just completely missing the point. There's this choice to argue over the law and the Sabbath rather than to just see the beauty of what God is doing.
Mm-hmm. And if you look at chapter 11, everybody is confused, but the disciples and Mary and Martha follow Jesus and do what he's saying. And then they come to understand. So I think there's also that piece of, are we going to keep following the shepherd out of our confusion? Or are we going to stay in confusion and insist on it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. I mean, I think like the application that then led into Sue's sermon is like the way that I am the good shepherd. And the way of the shepherd is this alertness, because shepherds are alert, watching for the enemy, being sober-minded. I think that's a big deal. I think what struck me is that it's so easy in this culture to really be lulled into sort of the numbness of things. And when you don't realize that the enemy is coming over the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we were talking, my application on that was 1 Peter 5:8, where the enemy is going to and fro looking for whom he can devour. But the context of that is he's looking to devour people who aren't humble. Like, humility is the way of the shepherd.
Yeah.
And the enemy looks for the flag of arrogance. And I think sometimes we become numb to our own arrogance. Like, I think we're actually, the more numb you are, the more arrogant you actually are about because you are unwilling to be vulnerable. When you're unwilling to be vulnerable, there is an arrogance built into that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. That was one that really struck me. And obviously, you know, just how also, as I had been kind of processing social media, how the language of violence,
yeah,
like, is so prevalent in our, in social media, and has become more and more that way. And so, I mean, it's easy to be, just slip into that, and yeah, you get lost in it. And I think that's the thing, the way the sheep is, you end up lost. That's like the thing, that lost feeling is a big part of things anyway.
Yeah. Well, and that, I mean, I think the anger ties into, like, even just Jesus saying, you know, you've heard it said, do not commit murder, but tell you the truth, anyone who hates his brother, like, that's what we're invited into, in what you're talking about, in the anger and the violence. Right. Like, when we were on social media, we're like, I don't know what Eric's talking about, like, violence. Why? I'm not violent. But then we're invited into hate.
Right.
And to cut people off and to say, that person is not worthy of being listened to or cared for.
Right.
That's violence. That's the hate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That comes along with social media.
Right. And really holding on to tribal values.
Yeah.
Like, not that you can't have values, but these aren't our values that have to go to war with other people's values.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And not being a person who speaks for peace. And then we head into John 11, and you took on, like, a giant, big, huge text. We all did, but you...
Well, it's also, John 11 is just this really, you pointed out, is this significant moment in John.
Yeah, there's big shifts that take place.
Yeah, the brakes are put on in the narrative.
And Jesus, his trajectory moves toward the cross at that point.
Yeah.
Really clearly. Yeah, so John 11 is about the death of Lazarus and Jesus coming to raise him from the dead. And then just the fact that he lets time pass after he finds out that Lazarus is sick. And even though Mary and Martha, who are Lazarus's sisters, ask him for help, send for help, he waits. And what does that mean for us?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what did it mean for Lazarus? What did it mean for Jesus and his disciples and everyone who was present there?
I loved your wait what moments.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a great part of the narrative, the way you told the story.
I think, you know, once we've come across a story like the one of Lazarus, it's really easy for it to feel normal and to just be like, oh yeah, Jesus raises people from the dead. But there's a lot of confusing moments if you really get your feet into that story.
Yeah.
And imagine being there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about, I loved what you said about the difference between how Jesus engages Mary and Martha.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mary, so Martha encounters Jesus first, and we know not just from this encounter, but also in the coming chapter, we're going to see Mary kind of who she is, because she anoints Jesus's feet with her tears and dries them with her hair. Like, this very emotional encounter with Jesus is coming in John. And then also just from other gospels, we kind of have this feel of like, Martha is very action oriented and she's running the show. And so when Martha comes out and meets Jesus, she says, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Mary sees Jesus, she says exactly the same thing, but then they have really different interactions afterwards. And so Jesus meets Martha in her questions and her statements about who he is and what he can do and what the Father is doing through him. And that's where the I am statement shows up of, yeah, I am the resurrection and the life.
Yeah.
And do you believe? Whoever comes to me will not die. Whoever believes will live. And do you believe? And then she makes this statement about who Jesus is. You are the Messiah. You are the Son of God. You are the one who was to come. And that's right in the middle of the Gospel of John, that statement of belief. And so he meets her in a theological way where Mary just comes and throws herself on the ground and says exactly the same thing. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And he feels deep emotions and weeps with her.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think he really, and you see it all the way through the Gospel of John, that Jesus meets people where they're at.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting also, this came up in the morning service, but not the evening service, but Jesus meets Lazarus where he's at too. Lazarus is dead and Jesus meets him at the tomb and calls him out. And I think he does that for us too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think your application was brilliant because I think it is a discipleship like thing that you offered everybody that they can hold on to. Because I was just struck by how you said the first thing is a statement of fact and need, like not a can you do anything about this. It's this is what's happened. And your friend is sick.
Yeah, just notifying Jesus of what's on your heart.
Yeah, I think that's the first and very important space. And then the second one is this question, like having the, or just being willing to ask the question, like, where were you? Like, why haven't you done this? Why haven't you acted? I think it's a scary question to ask God, but it is the one that moment invites for both of them. And it's interesting that the freedom to engage, like there's not a proper way, right? You can engage in your full self if you weren't here. And then there's this intellectual question. If you mm-hmm. weren't here and there's all this crying
mm-hmm.
and Jesus is able to then engage and act. And I love like the next thing is like, you're looking as you have the conversation with God, you ask the question. Now you're just looking for what Jesus is going to do, like, and go follow him and even question that. Martha's like, well, why are we rolling the stone away? Because it's going to be smelly in there.
Yeah. And I think in both cases, we need to be really careful not to demand that Jesus answer the question.
Right.
Because Jesus often responds to people's questions with something else.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
for both of them, he doesn't explain himself.
No.
He doesn't say, well, I needed this to happen so these things could happen. So he doesn't, there's no explanation of it. There is just an entering into something deeper with them. And so I think we need to pay attention to that too and notice, listen, that Jesus may say something to us that we don't expect and we need to receive it.
Yeah.
And then there's the following of where Jesus is going. Like they follow him to the tomb, but then he also tells them to do something peculiar. And I think that happens to us sometimes too, where there's something we don't understand that seems weird that we think God is telling us to do. And maybe we just need to do it to see what's going to happen on the other side of it.
Well, and I don't think that they're expecting him to raise Lazarus from the dead.
Yeah.
Like, and when he says, like, let's show me where you have lain him, he's been crying and weeping. Like, that's kind of an expected thing for him to say. Like, he shows up, Lazarus is dead, he talks to Martha, and then he weeps with Mary, and all the mourners are there, and then he's like, show me where you have lain him. And they go to the tomb. Like, that's like, all of
that's
that
normal.
Is normal.
Yes.
Rolling the stone away.
And then there's the peculiar, hey, roll the stone away. Okay, well, why? It's been 3 days, man. Like, he's going to be smelly. Like,
you don't want to see him.
You don't want to see him. Like we can attest he's in there. Like, you don't want to do that. Like, that's the peculiar moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Expect it because we read it like looking back and knowing this is the resurrection of Lazarus.
Yeah.
But they're just in this moment of like, oh man, we're going to go mourn with Jesus. And then all of a sudden he's doing these weird things and you're like, wait, what are we doing? That sounds like a weird idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So something that's interesting right there is Jesus says, where have you lain him? And they say, come and see. And we haven't seen come and see since John 1.
Mm.
When twice in John 1 it happens where Jesus, the two disciples who are following John say, Lord, where are you staying? And he says, come and see.
Mm.
And then Philip calls Nathaniel and tells him about the Messiah and says, come and see. And then, so at the beginning of John, we have this thing
interesting.
Where people are saying, look, it's the Messiah. They're pointing towards life. And here in John 11, he asks where the body is and they're pointing towards death.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, Lord, come and see. I just think that contrast is really interesting.
Yeah.
And actually what they, and almost prophetic in a way, because what's going to happen is they're going to come and see who he is.
Yeah, he's going to reveal himself.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I think the thing that's interesting about the Gospel of John is that, yeah, there's the calling of a few of the disciples, but it's really kind of fluid as to who's a disciple. Mm-hmm. And it seems like John, I mean, it's clear that he identifies people who are around Jesus. He refers to the people as the 12 on occasion, but it's a much broader group of people that are connected and acting with John. And I think that's really interesting. Like, they have a high value of relationship. Like, Jesus isn't just like, oh, I'm here with my 12. Like, no, he has a...
Which calls back to the bread of life, which when he says, I am the bread of life, whoever comes and eats my body and drinks my blood. And then it's like, oh, no, we're out. And
yeah, what's happened?
A lot of the disciples leave, and you're like, wait, the disciples leave? And he's, John's got this big picture of disciples, like all the people who are following Jesus. Mm-hmm. And then Jesus turns to the 12. So when we're in John and we read the disciples or the people follow Jesus, we're reading a bigger idea.
Yeah.
Which I think is revealed a lot in John. Mm-hmm. We had the moment with the woman caught in adultery where there's like a big crowd around when you imagine what that's like. Yeah. And then there's the moment with the blind man who, when Jesus comes and talks to him, you have this picture of like, oh, it's just him and the blind man, and the blind man worships him. And then it's like, oh, some of the Pharisees are, oh, there's like a big crowd here.
Yeah, following him around.
Following him around.
Yeah. I think probably Jesus' strategy was that he actually had two kinds of disciples. He had traveling disciples and local disciples. Mm. So Lazarus and Mary and Martha were probably local to their space. And so every time he's there, they're his disciples. They're the ones disseminating things, taking care of him. And the other disciples are helping there. So the travel disciples move from place to place. The others are all... Because that's why I think once the Spirit is poured out, it moves so rapidly. Is it got, Jesus has planted churches basically everywhere.
Everywhere.
In Galilee and Bethany and other places. And so he's just like... Psh.
Well, even into the Greek areas.
Yeah.
The Decapolis.
Yeah. And which we'll talk a little bit about the Greek people wanting to talk to Jesus this week. But.
Yeah. Well, and that points us forward to, this is the turning point in John. Like everything, you've got 3 years of ministry, and then we hit Lazarus, and then everything from here on out is just the last week.
Right.
He's like going into Jerusalem. We're going to have Palm Sunday, the triumphal entry. We're going to have all the conversations that he has around the true vine and the branches. And
Jesus' prayer in 17.
His prayers.
The final Passover.
The final Passover and walking to the cross and the empty tomb. And we'll come back around to all of that and what happens after. But it does lead us. Now it's fascinating because now we're still going to be preaching on this in June.
Right.
But from here to June is just 1 week.
Right.
And all the stuff that happens in that 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, guys, I've really enjoyed doing the Gospel of John, and apparently Sue got everybody else to say that in her sermon.
Yes.
Cheer for the Gospel of John. Did they cheer in the evening service, too? Did you get them to cheer?
Eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's very true. I mean, I've had great conversations around just like, oh, man, there's like these little moments that you don't think about when you go through a book like this and teach on it.
Right.
Like even like the idea of Jesus as the gate.
Yeah.
Like he's sitting in the doorway at night guarding from all the wolves. They're coming in and we're inside these walls and he is the door. He's sitting there in the door. Like that, like just drawing out that moment led to like a number of conversations that I had. It's been really good.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, guys, if you're listening to this and you've made it all the way through, thank you. We love you guys. As always, you can email us at healingthecity@gmail.com or villagersonline.com. More importantly than anything, just go online and say, this is the best podcast ever. And that will help get us out to more people in the community. Thanks, guys. This was fun. All right.